USC and Boulevard Studios have partnered up, but will it transfer into recruiting and wins? UCLA is dropping straight cash, homie, on food. The University of Arizona receives their notice of allegations. Now what? All the recruiting updates. And Jimmy Lake is up in Seattle trolling the SEC. The Pac-12 gets a new partner. And the Pac-12 VP of Media Relations is out after 25 years, and I've lost my hookup. And the Pac-12 releases its hoop schedule. I'm George Reister, he's Ralph Amsden, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles podcast, the podcast by Pac-12 fans for Pac-12 fans, where you get the real, you get the truth. We will not sugarcoat it or offer you any BS. We will keep it real with you. Make sure that you guys leave a five-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. Not just a review, but an actual, what do you call that, Ralph? Not the review, but not just five stars, but what do you call that thing when you actually write it out?
A review.
Okay, a written review.
Write us a poem or a haiku. I love haikus. I'm probably, I would say that the thing I thought I was best at in the world was Connect Four. And then when you beat me like 10 games in a row, I had to switch that to haikus. I think I'm probably the best person in the world at haikus. And if you beat me at that, I'll have nothing left. So there will be no competition.
Yes, let's write a haiku for the Pac-12 preview on Monday.
Okay. All right, I got you.
Okay. Yes. And most importantly, you guys, make sure that you share with a friend. A friend who loves college football, loves the Pac-12, and wants the real as well. And you can reach us, I'm Matt@unafraidshow.com or at Pac-12 Apostles, or Ralph on Twitter at Ralph Amsden, and me at George Reister. So, Ralph, the games are going on, clearly, for everybody else. And I just want to touch on super quick. Everybody is upset with Kevin Warren over in the Big Ten for, like, now they've had a game canceled because Wisconsin has had an outbreak. Their players, the six who have tested positive up to this point, are out for 21 days pending medical evaluations and all of that. We found out the Pac-12s that they're sit out. Mandates are less than the 21 days, but like, what's your take on how everybody is criticizing Kevin Warren about Nebraska not getting to play UT Chattanooga after they've said that UT Chattanooga, hell, they have more stringent protocols than the Big Ten, but they won't let them play?
I think that criticisms of Kevin Warren are typically unwarranted and emotional. It's just people emoting, and it's hard to hear what people are actually saying through just the tears and the baby babble that happens in the Big Ten sometimes. But if UT Chattanooga wants to play and Nebraska wants to play, I think your first instinct should be, can we find a way? And then if the answer's no, the answer's no. But dropping the hammer on people trying to make this work, I think it maybe warrants some criticism. But at the same time, I get anybody who's fatigued by Nebraska just being the whiniest voice out there.
Yeah, see, I disagree with, I agree with the fact of Nebraska being the whiniest voice, because I tweeted earlier, I was like, Nebraska is the Big Ten's rebellious child. that they just want to do whatever it is that they want to do. They want to eat ice cream in the morning, and you have to tell them no. The only reason I get wanting to play games, but we saw from last week where the Big Ten's two games that were on in primetime, the Nebraska-Ohio State game and the Michigan and the Michigan game were the two highest rated games in terms of viewership of the weekend. The Big Ten is the most watched conference. So if you're the Big Ten, are you willing to sacrifice? You've already lost the Wisconsin-Nebraska game, but are you willing to sacrifice Nebraska potentially playing against UT Chattanooga? I know everybody tested negative and all this stuff, but people traveling, people interacting from the different schools and the different teams, which just puts you at a little bit of elevated risk, which then can put another Big Ten game in jeopardy, which then messes up the money for just a little bit of cash for the school Nebraska. I just don't see it as a worthwhile risk when it's not going to benefit the conference as a whole. Like if they were scheduling a game, like if Tennessee, just to use UT's, if Tennessee had gotten their game canceled and Nebraska was trying to play Tennessee, that seems like a more worthwhile matchup for the conference in general than it just does for Tennessee. I'm sorry, than it does for just Nebraska trying to get a free win versus UT Chattanooga.
Yeah, I mean, but if UT Chattanooga wants it.
It's an FCS school too.
But if they want it, that could be big. That could be a big moment for all those UT Chattanooga kids. You know, I went to a high school game last Saturday, and it was between there's a city in South Central Arizona called Eloy. It's got like a prison nearby, and I think that kind of drives the economy. It's a real small town, and they have a 2A school, which means, you know, they only have like a couple hundred kids at their school. And they challenged the number 3 team in all of 4A when both of their opponents dropped out due to COVID restrictions. So I went out there on a Saturday night, and I watched the number 3 team in 4A, which is like, you know, 1600 to 1800 person schools, play the number 1 team in 2A. And they gave them just an absolute hell of a fight. And it was a really fun time. And the kids got to play some football. And ultimately, that's all they really wanted to be able to do, was to put some stuff on film and be given a chance. And so, you know, I respected that one real small school wanted to step up and take on any and all challengers, because they knew that it would make them better, because they knew that football wasn't guaranteed for tomorrow, and that the athletic directors of those schools found a way to make it happen. It ended up being kind of a really special moment. But then the purity of that gets taken away when it's college football and you're talking about Nebraska versus UT Chattanooga. And I don't see why you can't look at it in the same vein of like, you respect that somebody would reach out to Nebraska and say like, hey, we want some, and then respect the fact that Nebraska is willing to give them some. And I get that there's a context of, you know, Nebraska just kind of being difficult regardless. But at the end of the day, I want to see these kids play football, and they want to play football. And I think that trying to find a way to facilitate it, and then if you run into the idea that it might not be the best thing for everybody involved, you can back out. But this, it sounds more like it was just like, no, we're not doing this. And yeah. I don't respect that.
Well, see, the only reason why I respect it is just because you have to look at the bigger picture. And then like, and if a player from Nebraska messes around and gets COVID or something, and then they actually have to cancel the next week of a Big Ten game. Hell no.
I don't know. It's a quote, Cardale Jones.
It's not worth it
Came here to play football, not play pandemic. So I'm not going to be mad at people for trying to focus on trying to get on the field, but somebody has to be the bad guy, and that's Kevin Warren.
Somebody's got to be the adult in the room. Yeah. And that was the Big Ten. And that's where and granted, this same situation could come up in the Pac-12. This is why the whole reason for the discussion, because what if this happens to USC or Oregon or Arizona State or any of these other schools? Are the teams going to be willing to do it? And I've said, like, from a jump, like, it's insane to me that the Big Ten, because there have been so many people that have said, oh, the Big Ten, they messed up by waiting so long. They couldn't have a bye week and all of this. And I was like, it's insane to me that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 conferences were erring on the side of safety when people's lives are at risk. Like, how is that controversial? And that, granted that the percentage of people that die, like most people are 90, 99, 98, 97% supposed to survive from it, but we don't know all the long-term health effects. And I love football more than probably most people who quote unquote say that they're fans. And we've talked about it, about playing it, trying to play is the right answer as long as there are the proper protocols in place, cardiac screening for players and all of that. But I just, it's super easy for these multimillionaire coaches, administrators, networks, and everybody to demand that games get played by unpaid labor. And like, yes, the kids want to play, but this is a different situation than the NFL where they have a union and all of that. The only people that are protecting these kids supposedly are the people who are financially enriched by the games being played.
Yeah. So. I hate all of this. It's everybody's always just trying to make the best bad decision. That's what 2020 has become. Everybody in every situation is trying to make the best bad decision. And the worst thing that it feels like you can be in 2020 is anybody with any decision-making power. Because everybody else is just sitting around without anything to do because of COVID. And they're filling up that time by everyone's either starting a podcast or becoming a professional critic. That's all I've seen is an uptick in podcasts and criticism.
You're right about that. There was some new production going on in the Pac-12. There was a USC video, which I will put the link to in the description of the podcast. USC put out what would you call this video? It was like because they weren't selling anything besides trying to sell the USC brand. It felt
very much like a early 90s music video where there was a story lead in and then the actual music video. They put together something that you would have seen on like TRL.
Yes. Yep.
It's good too.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it because the USC in it was it was prominent, but it was still very subtle. Like it wasn't like, hey, yo, come to USC. It was like, oh, nah, this is just how USC rolls. I mean, the video features. So there is in the beginning of the video, there is there are like coaches arriving in a helicopter, and then somebody's driving in a McLaren, a yellow McLaren, and then they go up to this house, this mansion that is on, you know, one of the ones where it has a great view of Los Angeles. They showed a Hollywood sign, all of this stuff, and you got Amon-Ra St. Brown, Elijah Griffin, other current players actually up there with Clay Helton, Kerry Colbert, Dante Williams, everybody party, and some of the cheerleaders, they're partying at this house. Like, this is how we do in LA. And then at the end, they have what's the kid that plays for the Titans? Adoree Jackson. They have Adoree Jackson. They have Juju Smith-Schuster.
Matt Leinart and his Heisman make an appearance.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're name dropping, but you have to be in the know to know who these people are too. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be part of the cool crowd. Like, they're not going to put any captions underneath and tell you who these people are. That wouldn't be cool. So like, it's a pool party. Everybody's having fun. Clay Helton's flipping burgers on the grill. I mean, I thought it was a very well produced video, but at the end I was wondering, I was like, yeah, this lifestyle looks great, but is this enough to sell kids on going to USC? And I'm going to ask my 14-year-old son to watch the video. I should have asked him even before the podcast to watch this video and tell me if this would make him want to go to USC.
I mean, it's fun and it's good and it's well made. And what it's trying to signal to everyone is you will not be more ahead of the curve for the name, image, and likeness branding, self-branding revolution that's coming than you will be in Los Angeles, where everybody's a brand, right? And they're.
But do you believe that though?
Well, I mean, the proof is in what. So this is part of it. Like, this is the first step, right? And that. And what did they do? Let's take a look. They brought alumni in. They prominently featured current players on the team. My brain almost fell out of my skull when I saw a little Desert Mountain High School Keaton Slovis out front. Featured prominently in a hip hop music video with his teammates, where he's dancing, throwing the football. He's got a tux on in the theater, hanging out with Matt Leinart. Like, the idea that Keaton Slovis went from being somebody who they didn't even name the starter last year to 14 months later being front and center in a USC music video is mind-blowing. So they got current players, they got past players, they featured the city with drone footage, they painted a picture of a party atmosphere, even though nobody's partying like this in LA right now, getting the police called on them, George. That's probably the funniest part of this, is there's like no hint of COVID anywhere.
You can't do any of these damn things in LA right now, dude. Your neighbors will call the police on you. Like the
yeah. And you had the fast cars, you had the pool, you had the burgers, you had Clay Helton prominently featured, and they even said Boulevard Bound, a film by Coach Clay Helton at the end. So they made it look like he was the driving force behind this entire thing. And then the other really interesting thing about this is, and you don't know unless you know, but they had a bunch of Instagram influencers as extras.
Yep.
They had a girl named Sydney Goodman who does stuff for the IGTV, the video game, like gaming network. She was the red carpet host. And then they had her in like a low cut dress playing video games with a player. She's got 291,000 followers on Instagram. They also had Presley Tennant and Chloe Tess Miller, who have a combined 80,000 followers on Instagram. So they're using Instagram influencers. They're using the city. They're using the players. They're using the past players. Everything about this was fantastic. I think it will be an effective thing in that people watch it and say like, oh, like that's somewhere where I would want to be. They have to take in consideration that, like you said, you literally can't do these things right now, which is funny. And not funny. It's terrible. I'm sorry. But you can't do these things right now. And also, that head coach that was prominently featured throughout the entirety of this video is somebody that 99.9% of the fan base wants gone yesterday.
Dude, that's the crazy part about it is that, okay, at the end of the day, this USC video, I think it can be positive and actually do some good in selling the brand, right? But but Clay Helton has to win. Clay Helton has to win. And this video was not cheap. Was not cheap at all.
No.
Like, this is a very, very expensive video. And this was 3 minutes of expensiveness, 100 grand type expensiveness. And I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm like, wow, this means a further commitment to Clay Helton, right? You have to be totally committed because this video has a shelf life if you fire him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This video
had they made this video leading into last year, they would have, it would feature a quarterback who's no longer at the school.
Exactly. So that I know that they're very confident in Keaton Slovis. Even if Keaton Slovis got hurt, the video would still be, you could still use it. If Elijah Griffin, you could still use the video. But this, I mean, like, if Clay Helton goes 3-3 in the conference, do they fire him and just blow the video up? I mean, seriously, like, the thing that you were planning on using the video for, which is a recruiting tool to try to sell name, image, and likeness, if he goes 3-3, fans are going to be pissed and demand he be fired. So that, like, even if he loses game one, like, this video is a waste, right? If he loses to Arizona State at 9 a.m., USC fans are going to be calling for his head, no matter pandemic, how much money they owe him. They're not going to give a damn.
Yeah, but you see what you want to see. If you're a recruit and you're watching that video, your eyes aren't lighting up every time Clay Helton's on screen flipping burgers. Your eyes light up when you see the same girls that are on your Instagram feed that you follow because they're influencers. Your eyes light up when you see a McLaren. Your eyes light up when you see a pool party when you're not allowed to go to pool parties. You see Keaton Slovis, QB1, out there in a Dodgers jersey when they just won a world championship in a 60-game season, asterisk. But, like, you're going to feel how you feel about this. You and I will be able to laugh about the fact that this video is out there, but a kid's going to watch this video and they're not going to be looking at it for Clay Helton. They're going to be looking at it for, you know, all of the other things. And so I don't know. I think it's effective.
They don't know who's going to be their head coach. Right.
Right. But I don't know. Production value. You're gonna get me to say something that's gonna get us in trouble. So, should I? All
right. Go ahead, say it. Go ahead, say it.
You can put
this is an independent production.
All right, man. We got a television president. We got a guy who most people knew from his self promotion, his appearances in magazines, and the game show that he ran on TV, a game show that I watched and that I liked very much, especially the celebrity episodes or the seasons where my dude from Poison ended up winning it all. I watched that show. I enjoyed it. He got name recognition and brand recognition from being on a screen in front of people's faces. This video is about USC more than it was about Clay Helton. It serves its purpose in the immediate because it shows them as one big happy family. So if you're a recruit and you're seeing all the fans whine about how they don't want him around, but you see that the players like him and that he can kick back and everything like that, then that's going to assuage your fears in the immediacy. But I don't think people who commit to USC are committing there because of the head coach. They're probably doing it in spite of it at this point. And so, you know, I don't know. I think it was effective. I think you put those images on screen, they influence people the exact way that you want them to influence people. People are influenced by what they see in media, the images that they're shown. And like I said, like we got a president from the TV. We had a president from the movies 30 years ago. If you can get it out there in front of people, they'll eat it up. And you, like I said, you and I have the benefit of knowing and maybe being fooled once or twice by seeing something and then buying into it and realizing it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. But everybody's got to learn that lesson for themselves. And if I'm a 16-year-old and I'm watching that video, that's the best thing that I've seen in months.
See, I'm interested to see how this is going to affect recruiting, the name, image, and likeness stuff. I'm very curious about that because Alabama's in Tuscaloosa. There is Georgia, who is in Athens, but it's not too far from Atlanta. Will this boost Georgia Tech's recruiting? Will it boost Miami's? I mean, will the big cities actually, because it's different than professional sports, where the majority of the best teams are in small towns. Like, will Washington benefit and USC benefit recruiting? Will it hurt Oregon and Eugene, or will the small schools like Eugene, Tuscaloosa, well, in small cities, Eugene, Tuscaloosa, you have, you know, Athens, Georgia, Clemson, South Carolina, where there's less than like 10,000 people. Will Syracuse? I mean, I know it's not near New York City, but still, like, will, you know, Northwestern get a bump? Because will schools near Chicago or get a bump, or near big cities versus the small towns? Or will it still be exactly the way it is because those schools have such strong fan bases that the kids are going to be able to generate money in those places because those schools get such national coverage? And then you have a school like Oregon who has a national brand, and then they have Nike. So it's like they can put their players out wherever they are. So I wonder how big of an impact it's going to have.
I think that you use what you got, and if you have the ability to market what makes you unique, then I think we'll see some really cool stuff. I think ASU put a video out the other a few weeks ago, and you and I probably even touched on it when they were like, you can go out and you can see Devin Booker play courtside, which, again, you can't because they're in a bubble in Florida at the time. But, like, you know, that they're everybody's kind of using what they've got. And the cool thing about the Pac-12 cities is that they're all unique. You might not have an ocean nearby, but if you got a lake, you know, it'd appeal to the people like you and me, George. We're lake people, even though you live by the ocean. So
yeah, I'm definitely a lake guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I saw images, you know, if they had like drone shots of people hiking on Mount Hood or whatever, you know, they could do, for Oregon, or, you know, if University of Washington decided to like bring a camera down and watch people throw fish and just have players like enjoying it in the background, like there's a million different things that you could do. It opens up so many possibilities to discover your own unique identity and then market it to other people. And this company that USC used is out of Dallas. And so you're going to see people just going to the best branding and ad agencies and you're just going to see a ton of money dumped into that. Now would be a really good time, if you're young and creative, to find a way to pick up a handheld camera and find a way to make ordinary things look marketable so that you can get on at one of these firms or perhaps even start your own, because that's the future of the ways that colleges market themselves. Those stuffy commercials that they play at halftime, like come to Purdue. And it just shows like a few diverse students standing out in front of the campus. And then the stock footage of someone looking through a microscope, you know, that the days of that are gone. You know, it's going to be a lot more ethos-based storytelling. It's going to find a way to you know, get you going. And there's a bunch of, you know, there's stuff that you could do with an iPhone now that, you know, that you couldn't do with just a regular setup to film some of these commercials that were, you know, going on in the mid-2000s, that some of which they still run today. So, I don't know. I think it's a good thing. I think that it will certainly serve its purpose. I think it's the best thing that any Pac-12 school has done so far. And I think that it sets a pretty cool bar for some really entertaining stuff to come out. But yeah, you're going to have egg on your face with some of this stuff because the transfer portal's right there, free transfers right there. You know, if these players don't get their way, they're gone. And like we said before last season, that would have had a completely different quarterback starring in that video.
Yeah, and you do have to win. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you can make – I mean, it's not always the quote-unquote coolest thing that goes viral. It's not the most well-produced video that goes viral and makes people stars. Like the Cash Me Outside, how about that girl? Like, she was just on Dr. Phil. Nobody thought it would turn into Bad Barbie, Bad Baby, whatever her name is. You just don't know all the time what's going to catch. So, like, yes, this is a big deal, but they still have to put some substance behind the fluff. And the substance is the wins. And if they don't produce the wins, they can make 50 million videos. They can get Boulevard. They can get George Lucas to make a Star Wars video. They can get Michael Bay out here in LA to make a Transformers themed video. They can get every star that they want. They can get Snoop in the videos. They can get Will Ferrell, whoever else they want. If they don't produce wins, it means nothing. They will still get a few recruits, but they'll still be pulling in two-star linemen, three-star linemen, hoping to develop them. I mean, that, and the kids will still be defecting to other places. We talked about Stanford and their issue with food and their issue with how they treat their players with their housing and everything. There is a team in the Pac-12 that's doing the complete opposite, Ralph. That is UCLA. UCLA is putting straight cash, homie, into their meals. And I like it. I am all in on them spending bread on it. It just, the numbers just seem so far out of whack.
Come on, man.
Compared to the other schools, dude. So they spent, what was it? They spent $5.4 million on non-travel in 2019 on non-travel meals.
That's
the next closest.
Was that the whole, so this is what I'm trying to figure out. That's for football.
Yes, that's for football.
And they ran an $18 million deficit last year.
Yes, correct. So here are the numbers. UCLA at number one, 5.4 million. Arizona 1.2 million. Oregon 951,000. Oregon State 812. Cal 798. Utah 785. ASU 754. UW 670. Colorado 458. Wazoo 399, and then the only people that aren't in there are USC and Stanford. I would imagine that USC is closer to the upper tier of this just because they're in Los Angeles. Stuff costs a little bit more too, so I would expect them to be around that, around the million mark, somewhere around there, maybe a tad bit more. And then I would put Stanford probably near Wazoo, probably at the very bottom, considering what we know about them and their food accommodations. So they're probably last, if not close to last, but they shouldn't be last just because they're in California and stuff's more expensive. But still, like, so what was your take when you saw that UCLA spent three times more than, well, actually more than three times more than the next closest team?
I thought it was insane. It's completely insane, man. They spent $5.4 million on food. Were they just straight up eating caviar on everything? My wife's at Wingstop right now, getting me my usual like $11 8-piece lemon pepper meal. You could get that same meal 491,000 times.
You don't want to be feeding your players that, Ralph.
You might not want to be feeding your players that, but you can feed them something real good for 11 bucks.
You can't feed a freaking football player for 11 bucks with a quality meal.
You can too. You can make them a big, like, you can get them a protein with a salad and some
bread. What kind of protein are you getting? You aren't getting no step 4 grass-fed beef. You aren't getting that's antibiotic and hormone-free prime cut. These kids aren't eating choice. They're making millions of dollars for everybody else. They don't get choice. They get the real deal Holyfield, Ralph.
Yeah, they got ostrich burgers, wild boar, and venison. And on top of that, you know what else? They spent $40,000 to import 5 barbecue meals from an Arizona restaurant. You don't got barbecue in LA, George?
I would have gone to Blue So's, which is one of the best barbecue places in the country. And, shameless plug.
And you're telling me what can you get for $11? They bought hundreds and hundreds of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at $5 a pop from an LA caterer. That's too much for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You get the jar of Jif and the jar of Smuckers and a loaf of bread for $5.
Ralph, you don't get it.
What do you mean I don't get it? I got four kids.
You want to feed people who are making millions of dollars, so instead of feeding them like the high quality athletes that they are and feeding them high quality fuel, because Chip Kelly's all about fuel. Like, he feeds the kids good. Oh, okay. The $40,000 from barbecue from Arizona, probably a little too much. However, I will stand on my soapbox and say that these kids need to be fed better than whatever they're feeding them at Washington State for under $400,000 for an entire year. You're not giving them high quality food. You're giving them trash, dude. So, like, yes, you can get them fed, but there's a difference in getting them fed and fueling these kids. You want them to go out and make millions of dollars for you, for your coaches, for the universities? Yeah, I have no problem with them eating freaking ostrich burgers and filet mignon sometimes. They're not being paid. At least let them eat like kings, since they're going to line your pockets like kings.
Man, I don't know. Between $40 to $53 a meal? Between $40 to $53 a meal.
Who gives a damn, Ralph?
Late night snacks at $29 a person?
So what?
You're running an $18 million deficit and 5.4 of it is food.
I've learned an important lesson in life, Ralph. Don't count other people's money. And when
there's no money to count because they ran an $18 million deficit. I can't count backwards.
These kids are fueling they are fueling the economy.
They really think they can go get a three-star kid and feed him three $50 meals a day and turn him into a five-star kid. What kind of junk science is this?
What are you talking about? If you put have you ever seen the episode, the documentary Supersize Me?
Absolutely.
You
want to feed the kids? Yeah.
Exactly. You want to feed the kids damn McDonald's food every day and expect them to go out and play well?
No, there has to be an in between, man. It's the options. You're painting it as if the options are Taco Bell or Ruth's Chris. There is an entire industry in between those two things.
I think that they should be eating in between, but occasionally that they should get some Ruth's Chris. So the number, I do think that 5.4 is high, because I said that the $40,000 for the barbecue, too much, all that. So the number I'm looking at is about like 2.7. And I'm not complaining. I would not complain if this number, and I would not listen to anybody complaining at all if this number was in between 2.7 and 3 million. And I would demand that there be a floor for the rest of the teams. Everybody else has got to get up to at least a million. You got to feed your kids.
Okay, so let's say they have 85 scholarship players, right?
Mm-hmm. But they feed the walk-ons too now.
Okay, but
can't leave them out.
All right, well, let's keep it to the 85, because they're the ones at play. UCLA has 85 scholarship players. So what do you think? Just take a quick guess. What do you think the annual food cost is per scholarship player at UCLA?
But it's more than them. They're a feeding staff. They're feeding so let's say that they're feeding 100 people a day. Okay.
I'll just to be kind, we'll make it we'll make it with the staff, we'll make it like 110.
Okay.
So what do you think that is?
I mean, per day?
No, not per day. Not per day. Annually. What do you think they spend annually on food?
I can do a little bit of math. That's like about $490,000, right?
No.
Like 49.
So you're spending $49,000 per year per person on food. $49,000 per year per person on food.
That's not even that much. I spend $49,000 in food on myself probably in a year.
I don't know, man.
I'm dead serious, dude. I am dead serious. But not by myself, but that's $4,000 a month on food. But on a serious note, I was joking. I don't spend $49,000 alone on me, but my family spends more than $49,000 a year on food.
We got a family of six. We go about $450 a week, I would assume, on food. $300 at a grocery store, $150 just miscellaneous like coffee and eating out once or twice. The median household income of LA, though, the median household income is $62,000. That's the median household income of LA. And you're spending $50,000 a year on just food per player. I just, when you're running a deficit like that and you're four times higher than the next closest school.
Okay, so how much do you think that they should spend on food? How much do you think that they should spend on food? Like, just looking at the raw numbers, how much would be an acceptable number in your mind? And what do you think about Washington State at 400,000, less than 400,000?
Well, it depends. So let's say you got $50 a day, right? $50 a day on food, almost as a per diem, just to set your budget. And you have,
but that's not even going to feed them, Ralph. $50 a day. They got to have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks.
What are you talking about? That's not going to feed them $50 a day. You could absolutely, even if they went to the same peanut butter and jelly sandwich person, you could get 10 of those peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for $50 in a day. Of course,
Ralph,
you can find a way.
That's not a nutritious, balanced meal, dude. They probably like to feed a football player breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. Because remember, he needs a lot of fuel to be able to perform, to make you millions of dollars. You're probably going to spend, like, if obviously you're buying in bulk, all of this stuff. So, like, if he gets a piece of chicken, a piece of steak, and a piece of seafood every day, then snacks are nuts and, you know, fruit and all this stuff. Dude, like, you could easily spend $75, $100 a day on them eating. And that wouldn't be like outrageous. Like, you are feeding machines who are making millions for you. Like, why are we trying to skimp on this? I mean, it's just like anything else. We find a way to get this unpaid labor and say, oh, wow, you guys are feeding these kids way too good. You need to cut the cost. You need to cut corners. You need to be closer to Wazoo at 400,000. They're doing it right. Hell no, man.
All right, so here's what I'll tell you. If you spent $50 a day and you assume that you have the kids for, or you have the players for two-thirds of the year, so you're responsible for two-thirds of the days in which they eat food. Okay, so
I would say probably more than that, probably three-fourths.
Let's assume it's two-thirds. Assume it's two-thirds, because I'm going to show you something. If you have them for two-thirds of the year, and you spend $50 a day on 85 scholarship football players, you are going to have the third most highest total on this list at over $1 million per year. And you're telling me you can't get it done on $50 a day. Washington State is getting it done, and it might not be up to your standards, but Washington State is getting it done on a third of that. $50 a day should be fine.
They're shopping at Costco, bro. And they're feeding the kids freaking pasta. They're feeding them spaghetti with marinara for a third of those meals. And some antibiotic filled chicken breasts. So yeah.
Just get some Taco Bell, sprinkle some vitamins in it, roll that taco back up. It's just a chemical compound. It doesn't matter. Oh. It does not matter. It does not matter if it does not matter if somebody gave your Kobe beef steer a butt massage every single night before they carved that cow up. Steak is steak. It doesn't matter how tender it is.
Have you ever had like A5 Kobe beef or A5 Wagyu beef?
Taste isn't nutrition, though.
Hey, bro.
Just give me what I need in a little pill, in a little green pill. Give me the stuff. You just throw the little capsule in the microwave, and it turns into whatever you need. And let me get on my way.
Bro, I'm not killing my wife gets upset because I do the majority of our grocery shopping and how much I spend on food. And I'm like, babe, you are the person who wants us to eat well, right? This is how much eating well costs. So I get what UCLA is doing. I mean, that's probably why we spend more on food than probably our mortgage, but that's fine.
I just think I personally fully believe that you should be taking these kids' bodies and nutrition into account. I think the level with which Chip Kelly has taken it should probably include an out of conference victory at some point. If you're spending $200 a day per player on food, they should be able to beat Cincinnati.
Wow.
Ostrich burgers, George. Ostrich.
Okay, that's a subject change because you just dropped the mic on that one. I'm not even going to try to even respond to that. But you know who did drop the mic on another thing? Your boy Jimmy, new coach in Lake, up by the lake in Seattle. He is trolling the SEC.
I feel like you get to drop your you get to drop the rivalry for a minute and applaud him for this.
Yes, I do. I do because I love it. I love it. He said the preseason game for purple 59, gold 52. And he said, correction, I was looking at a SEC score from last week. We still play defense out west. Purple 24, gold 20. Hashtag bow down to Washington. Aside from the bow down to Washington part, it was a great tweet. I did not mind it at all. I love the trolling because the SEC, all you hear about, they don't play defense on the West Coast. They don't. And Washington has played defense for quite some time. Like, they haven't allowed 35 points or more in it's been a minute. And or only a couple times in the last like 4 or 5 years. And the crazy part is that the SEC scores, they look like Big 12 scores. And nobody's really talking about it like that right now, but let a high scoring Pac-12 game happen and everybody's acting like there's no defense on the West Coast. So I applaud Jimmy for this high level troll. I'm on it.
You're going to like it even more because apparently this is a double troll. It's not just targeting the SEC, but his own fan base, because I guess, I don't know if this was this year or last, they had a scrimmage that ended 9-6, which caused the entire fan base to melt down over the idea that they couldn't play offense. So they were saying,
well, their offense was bad.
Right. So they're saying, like, what does that say about, you know, about the offense? So when he fired off the 59-52, it was a shot at all of the fans who melted down over the 9-6 game.
Oh, so that made it even better.
So he's roasting Washington fans and the SEC at the exact same time as the head coach of Washington.
Yeah.
There's even comments. There's even replies under it. So was the 9-6 a joke too?
Yeah. Yep. I am all in favor. I like the trolling. I like this sort of stuff. I hate when coaches try to play it too close to the vest. His defense should be good again this year. They were young last year. Yeah, so I'm all in favor of it, especially when you know you got something going too. You can actually shoot off these kind of tweets. But if they mess around and they give up like 40 points in a game or get housed, this tweet will come back to haunt him.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I like for the coaches to have a little bit of personality, and everyone always said they felt like it was just relegated to Leach, but it's cool to see other coaches get involved.
Dude, I messed up, Ralph. I messed up, bro. I had a perfect opportunity to segue into a different topic, and I went to the wrong one. I went to Jimmy Lake. And we just talked about all the food costs. So where should I have gone next? The Pac-12
getting seafood, a new seafood. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you just gonna cut it up?
No.
We're still recording?
Yes, we're still recording.
I was about to say a cuss word.
So I'll let you tell everybody about it.
Yeah, so the conference commissioner gave us all crabs this week. So it's pretty exciting time to be a Pac-12 fan. We got ourselves some crabs, some lobster, some pork. I guess they do other meats too. We now have Pacific Seafood as the official meat and seafood provider of the Pac-12. Did not know that was something that we need. I will say that it made Twitter a very entertaining place for about 24 hours of people just absolutely roasting the Pac-12 for coming out with an important announcement and having it be that they partnered with a seafood company. I very much enjoyed all of the tweets that they received in their replies and the quote tweets. In fact, while you give me your thoughts, George, I'm going to pull it up and I'm going to read off a couple of my favorites.
I thought that this should help UCLA's food costs go down some, probably.
Is that what it means? Does that mean they'll get some free fish? What does it mean?
I don't know. Hey, but the thing is, however much they spent on they can supplement some of that, you know, that high quality beef and chicken that they bought. They can probably get some king crab legs for like the same price now. So instead of paying, you know, like 28 bucks a or like 25 bucks a pound for some king crab legs, maybe they can get them, you know, at $5-6 bucks a pound at like a corporate discount rate or something, and feed the kids, take the, you know, they can be eating lobster every night for, you know, a third of the price.
Maybe that was the thing. Maybe the Pacific Seafoods caught wind of the actual uptick in food spending from the Pac-12 and tried to get out in front of it and filter some of that cash their way. I couldn't be mad at them for that. And then, you know, Larry Scott found a way to at least, you know, he likes to periodically announce that they made some sort of successful negotiation. John Canzano went right for Larry Scott's throat, like he always does. He said, "Odds this Pacific Seafood deal outlasts the current conference commissioner." Let's see. Dave Softy Mahler, who is a radio show host out of Seattle, said, "Surf and turf in the press box." Somebody asked if they thought that this was just a product sponsorship or if there was actual cash involved. I mean, there would have to be, right? Like there have to be. There's a kickback from Pacific Seafood to the Pac-12, and then the Pac-12 is going to steer business their way and then pocket the money from that business. Is this a way? Hold on. Is this a way for the Pac-12 to get the cash that the schools are spending on food in their pocket?
I mean, technically, there's okay. I think you just brought up a very good point, though.
I don't know how business works, so I'm
what if there's not cash involved? What if this is like a product sponsorship, where the conference that like at the Pac-12 headquarters where all the you know the two comma people work, that they get seafood and that they get to sponsor and that they maybe that they'll sponsor like a bowl game or whatever, but it may not actually be cash pouring into the conference, or that the schools may get a certain amount of food, or
if it is cash,
whatever.
But if it is cash pouring into the conference, then I'm assuming that Pacific Seafood can say, hey, they're going to steer X amount of business our way, which is going to mean that we have X amount of cash on hand, which means we can afford to sponsor the Pac-12. Therefore, making Chip Kelly's ostrich burger orders actually put money in Larry Scott's pocket. I don't mean to get all Alex Jones here, but I'm just trying to connect the dots. Yeah, here's another good one. Oh, cool. We made a deal with an effing fish stick company before YouTube TV. I cannot stop laughing at this. Larry Scott saved the day with Chex Notes, Pacific Seafood. Someone asked if Larry Scott was not getting enough fresh seafood in his diet. Yeah, there's quite a bit of very, very funny gifts and comments, but a lot of sarcastic, the Pac-12 is back tweets, and a lot of George Costanza stuffing his face with shrimp.
This is atrocious, dude. I mean, like, I get it. Like, I don't mind. The only reason why this feels so bad to the conference is because it's like you getting. It's like you need a new faucet for your sink, right? Or new tires for your car. Like, it's like you need new tires for your car. Because they're a bald, but instead you go get the seats refurbished. You're like, no, but we need new tires. They're bald. We're like literally hydroplaning when it's not raining outside. We need new tires. And instead you get new seat covers or you get a new radio. Like, yes, the radio is cool. There's nothing wrong with getting a new radio or new seat covers. You needed tires, which are more important, which is the availability. I would say the best thing that's come out of the pandemic for the Pac-12 is that every game is going to be nationally televised. And I know that technically the Pac-12 network was nationally televised as well, but it's not when it's less than when it's like 17 million homes. That's not that's like regional network.
I think the weirdest thing about it is then the next day they announced a sponsorship with Pacific Premier Bank. And then it just had people wondering if they're out there looking for companies with Pacific in the name because they ran out of other ideas.
Oh, so they're just looking for people that start with Pacific?
Yeah. That's so funny. Like PacSun is going to be the official clothing sponsor. The Chrysler Pacifica will be the official car of the Pac-12.
That can't be the official car. I would quit the conference if that becomes the official car.
Dude. That's where you draw the line, is the Chrysler yes. Pacifica?
Yeah, that's where I draw the because I don't know if I told you, but my wife got us to get a Chrysler Pacifica and was like, George, get rid of your Navigator. Get the Chrysler Pacifica, and then we'll get a car too for for you to drive around in every day. That way, you don't have to drive the minivan, blah blah blah. And she drives the Tesla the majority of the time, right? So, and I am driving this stupid minivan all the time, and I'm like,
so you have one right now,
correct?
So it technically is the car of the Pac-12.
So. And I'm sitting there like, all right, okay, I've had plenty of opportunity to go get another car. But now I'm so used to us saving so much money that I'm like, do I really want to go get another car? But there are some days that I just, when I'm not driving the Tesla, that I absolutely hate my life driving a minivan.
I just got a text message from my wife who is listening to just my end of the podcast from the other room and wrote, all she wrote was, that's a great car.
See, I hope you tell her what I said. I feel like less of a, like you.
Well, you're trying to, Larry Scott could justify it by saying like, I'm trying to bring female eyeballs onto some of these Pac-12 games.
Dude, I am against toxic masculinity and these ideas that your manhood is attached to certain things. But I don't feel right driving a minivan. That's not my. I know that some guys can. It's just not me. Like, I belong in a muscle car.
Okay, but it doesn't mean you have. I mean, you already have one, but it doesn't mean you have to like be proud. Are you gonna buy more Pacific Seafood because of this sponsorship deal?
No, but I will see if I can get a discount though, because I am about the discount. But yeah. So I am in line for the Tesla truck and the Hummer truck. Just so everybody knows. The next thing up, the University of Arizona, they're in trouble, allegedly, or maybe not. They got a notice of allegations from the Pac-12, which we knew was eventually coming. This is years and years old, from the wiretap conversations going back to Christian Dawkins. If you haven't seen the documentary on HBO, then you need to go see that. It was directed by this guy named Pat Condellis. It's about the quote. It's about the victimless crime of bribes going to kids to go to certain schools, and nobody's actually harmed in this. But some kind of way, because of this guy named Marty Blazer, who used to be a financial advisor for a bunch of NFL and NBA guys, but turns out he's a crook. He was getting investigated, and then he pointed the eyeballs on other people to try to get out of jail, and it ended up on squarely on the coach. Well,
Richardson, or
yeah, on Book Richardson and Sean Miller at Arizona, and Will whatever his name is over at LSU, their head coach over there, and now they've gotten a notice of allegations, but they're not releasing it yet. And I absolutely hate this. And for LSU, the same way, where they just self-imposed penalties on their football program, which was separate from the stuff that happened in basketball. I'm just looking at this and I'm like, we're in the process. We just watched a video of USC talking about name, image, and likeness legislation. But now the NCAA is getting ready to lay the hammer on Arizona or LSU and other schools. It just feels stupid to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the NCAA probably drug their feet on this, because the more precise they were with this investigation, the more energy that they put into it, the more everybody would have gotten in trouble. I think that they could probably hit Sean Miller with lack of institutional control, because that's like charging somebody with disorderly conduct. You can always find a way to justify it. I'm over it, though. I'm really over it. I'm past it. I know there's a lot of ASU fans that listen to this that want to hear, like, tear it all down. But at the same time, they love that U of A is always in trouble, and they're like, keep Sean Miller around for as long as possible if this is going to be the result. I don't know. I'm definitely over it. I get very curious about some of the different media members and personalities out there that seem to have a vested interest in wanting to see Sean Miller pay a heavy price for this. Dick Vitale is one of them. And I've questioned the veracity and responsibility of some of the reporting that was done leading up to this. But at the end of the day, if Sean Miller really wants to continue to pretend like he had no idea what was going on in his own program, then maybe he shouldn't have a program. It's pretty simple. So I just wish, and maybe it's just the system designed to where he can't own it, because then the punishment would be worse. But, you know, he just needs to say, yeah, I ran a program where obviously some stuff that shouldn't have been going on definitely was going on. And I have to be more vigilant from this point forward if Arizona will have me back. We'll take whatever punishment that that we get. We're not going to volunteer for anything because that always seems to be a stupid move. But, you know, it's about the future. And then just find a way to move on. But instead, he just keeps really tight-lipped and you have everybody calling for a pound of flesh. And I lost interest in this around the time that we actually got to talk to, you know, and Pat Condellis, and we talked about all these allegations, and I'm just over it. It happened so long ago, you know. Could it still be going on? Absolutely, but I got fatigue on this whole thing. The environment creates the opportunity for cheating, so they need to do something about the environment.
The lack of. Well, the underground economy is created by like the secrecy and the lack of actually being able to do something that makes sense. Like, there would be no underground economy if players were allowed to trade on their name, image, and likeness. Like, everything would be above board. It's like where weed is legal in so many states now. It's legal in so many states, and guess what that's done? That's cut down on simple arrests for marijuana, which allows people to be employed, have jobs, not overcrowding jails. There is not a underground. So, and then drug dealers, they are out of business because the shops can provide it for less, and now there's less people getting killed over weed. Still good and killed over other drugs, but less over that in terms of, so then you don't, then the cartels don't have to smuggle weed over. You can grow it here, sell it here. And then the best part about it, you get the tax money. So then streets are paved, schools are funded, all of this stuff from the thing that people were already going to be doing already. Just it's the secrecy and the point of being illegal of it and all that, that just makes the need for an underground economy and seedy people being a part of it. That's what I don't like. So I get that they broke the rules, and I agree with you about Sean Miller pretending like he didn't know anything was going on. He knew. But at the same time, this is a victimless crime, and I don't even... I could care less if they get punished. I would prefer if they didn't. And these kids are allowed to make money because it's stupid. And the NCAA they just exist to hear their own voice.
Yeah. And it's genuinely amazing how our standards change as the rules change, right? You know, if somebody violates a rule that we understand to be a rule, we look at them as amoral and a cheater and all of those things. But if the rule changes and you sort of like retrofit and you look back at something that somebody got in trouble for that is now legal, you can't take back any of that like vitriol and the pound of flesh that you were after and everything like that. But a rule is a rule. So, you know, you don't have to applaud that somebody gets in trouble, but it would be nice if somebody, you know, if Sean Miller would just take responsibility for the fact that he was involved in this, because to me, not knowing is always worse. If you don't know what's going on in your program, that's worse. Correct. It's worse in my eyes if he wasn't involved.
I 100% agree with that. And with that, though, like going back to the NCAA for a second, that's why when LSU self-imposed the penalties for the rules violations involving the football program with Odell Beckham Jr. handing out the money after the game, and with that kid's dad who got $180,000 that was stolen from the children's hospital, even though he didn't know it was. I just couldn't figure here's the thing that I thought about that, which kind of ties into Arizona. it's different because it's football as opposed to basketball, because the NCAA actually does control the championships in basketball. But if this happens to a football program like it did with USC years and years ago with Reggie Bush, I just don't understand why these programs at this point are saying, I don't care what you have to say, NCAA, go fly a kite. We don't care. We don't care about your allegations. We don't care about your investigation. We'll do what we want to do. And the reason why I say that is because we've seen during the coronavirus, Ralph, what did the NCAA say should be done about football during the coronavirus?
I don't think they helped out much at all.
Well, where the NCAA came out and said that they should not be playing, right? They said they shouldn't be playing this season. And then we found out the NCAA doesn't control the championships and actually has no power to stop teams from playing. They didn't think that they should be playing. So if they don't have power to stop you from playing, why the hell do you care about their penalties?
Right.
Like they have no power. Even if you don't educate the kids, don't honor scholarships, give them sham classes, whatever, they can't punish you. So why do you care? Like you're living in a world of invisible handcuffs. I just for the life of me, like it's like if you didn't do anything wrong and a security guard is trying to stop you, or a person saying, oh, look, I'm making a citizen's arrest. I don't know what you're doing right now. What are you doing? Show me your ID. If you knew you didn't do anything wrong, Ralph, and a security guard or a regular person just came up to you and was like, show me your ID. Where are you from? Where are you going? What are you going to tell them?
Nothing.
Exactly. Like, get out of my damn face.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what these schools should be doing to the NCAA at this point.
You'll like this. Maybe I've told this story before, but when I was 8 years old, I got caught stealing a pack of basketball cards from an Albertsons grocery store. And the woman who caught me said, we're going to tell your mom and just never do that again. And my stepmom at the time, that they were telling her, said, no, you need to punish him to the furthest extent possible so that he'll learn his lesson. And so they made us pay for the basketball cards, plus a $100 fine, plus they banned my whole family until I turned 18. So the grocery store that my family liked to shop at, they could no longer shop at. And that money, I didn't have $100 to pay. I didn't have $5 to buy the pack of basketball cards in the first place. So it cost my stepmom $105 and having to find a new grocery store, all because she said we needed to learn a lesson when getting caught was, trust me, bad enough for me. So when some of these schools go out there and they're like, all right, these are all the things that we're going to give up to punish ourselves, it always makes me laugh, because it's like, what if it wouldn't have been that? Like, what if it wouldn't have even been that bad? Like LSU just offered up several scholarships over Odell Beckham Jr. And that's, you know, it's just silly to me. You would have been better off waiting to see what they were going to do about it and chalking it up as a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Just to punish people just for the sake of punishing. That's a horrible story, Ralph. That's a horrible story. And, you know, I'm not going to say anything about your stepmother. there was a big piece of news out, though. It won't necessarily impact people who watch or listen to the Pac-12 so much, but there was a man named Dave Hirsch who had been at the conference for 25 years. Anytime that I needed access to anything, or when I was first getting credentialed with the Pac-12 and all this stuff, he was the guy that I went through to get email with, always took care of me. And now he's gone from the Pac-12 network. They agreed on a separation agreement. And it's like, he feels like he's, to me, it looked like he was a guy who sees he's on a sinking ship and is like, nah, I'm out before this ship sinks and I'm just going to go do something else.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for him, but I will say that if you go to his tweet of him just dropping a microphone in front of the Pac-12 sign and it says, it was an amazing 25-year run. Look at the people who are in his replies. Look at the people who quote tweeted him. It's nothing but respect and love and appreciation and just an outpouring of support. And then the continuous sentiment of the Pac-12 is in a worse place for having allowed him to be in a position to move on because they had already furloughed him. But I mean, some of these names, you remember Ted Miller, who used to cover the Pac-12 for ESPN, Greg Byrne, the former University of Arizona athletic director, who's now the athletic director at University of Alabama, Adam Ritterberg from ESPN, Stu Mandel is in here, Dennis Dodd from CBS, Sonny Dykes, former, you know, head coach of Cal is in his mentions, wishing him the best. And I mean, it's just absolutely nothing but glowing reviews and positivity and people appreciating him. Seems like a really, really great man. And it seems like that's the last kind of person that you'd want to not be attached to if you were the, if you were this conference. And that's not to say that they can't find somebody who's also good, but it just always seems to be that, you know, the Pac-12 can't have nice things. And the one nice thing that it did have in Dave Hirsch is now moved on, you know?
Yeah, that's a big deal. And okay. I'm going to preface this by, this is not a statement made upon inside information or anything. This is just me reading the tea leaves. If the Pac-12 is laying people off, yes, they're bringing some of them back. They're farming out some of their game. They're farming out games. They don't have a full staff for the future. They're paying way too much for their lease. The commissioner is in limbo, whether he's going to be back or not. You're trying to negotiate a new deal. Am I like, it feels like to me that the Pac-12 network is leaving.
It should.
We have seen the end of it, at least in its current form, where it's multiple networks, where you have the Mountain Network, the Oregon's, the Desert and the LA. I think that you're going to have more of a Pac-12, that the Pac-12 network is going to look like the SEC or ACC network, where it's run by a big corporate partner.
And that there will have been, and we just want to make sure that people realize that it will have been there because they ran it into the ground. But hey, you might just be really tuned in. It could be more than just you're reading the tea leaves, because every once in a while we do break a little bit of network news on this show. If you remember a couple episodes ago, I told you that Fox Sports Regional was going to be dumped off Hulu. And what happened?
Boom.
Yeah. We do know people. I would say that's probably the best path forward. The idea that they would try to salvage things and rebuild with something that wasn't necessarily working is it's not out of the question for Larry Scott to try to do something like that. I did find it interesting in John Wilner's most recent column that executive vice president for content of the Pac-12 network, Larry Myers, told John Wilner, "We will be as active as we can to push people to the games on Fox and ESPN." And I've been laughing about that quote all week because it makes the assumption that somebody's watching the Pac-12 network, which isn't airing games or a middle of the week show like they were doing before. So they're going to do their absolute best to push the people who accidentally turned their channel to the Pac-12 network to one of the other national networks that are readily available? What do you mean you're gonna be as active as you can to push people to the games on Fox and ESPN? You don't have their attention anyway, because you don't have anything for them to pay attention to. That's like me saying, I'm going to do the best job that I possibly can to get people to listen to Clay Travis. But like, nobody's listening to me for my opinion on whether or not they should listen to Clay Travis, when they could just listen to Clay Travis. He's got a much bigger platform than I ever would. No one's coming to me for an opinion on that sort of thing. It doesn't make sense. You know? So it's like me saying like, hey, I'm going to push people as much as they possibly can to make sure that a show wins an Oscar or an Emmy. It's not up to me. And it's definitely not up to the Pac-12 network to determine if ratings are good on any of these other networks, because nobody's going to be tuned into the Pac-12 network anyway. So they're still going to have the post-game show, which by then it will have been too late. And that'll have Yogi Roth and Ashley Adamson, but the Pac-12 network isn't really doing anything else. No Saturday pregame show, no midweek studio show. They're just going to they're just going to have the Pac-12 in 60 broadcasts.
Yep. I just don't see. Yeah, I mean, I guess, dude. It just feels sad, dude. Like, I want so much for the conference. Like, I tell my kid this sometimes when it comes to his sports and working out and all of this. I'm like, son, I can't want this more than you want it. Like, you, like, this has to be more important to you. And I think us fans, that the success of this feels like we want it more and are willing to do whatever it takes, even though it may hurt, to make it happen. And like, I read a lot of business books and all of this, and all of them all talk about pivoting, that sometimes you will start with one business model, like where, you know, where HP started out doing one thing and now they're doing another. You have Oracle was doing one thing, now doing another. Apple is doing different things than they were doing. Like you have to pivot. And if it, and that that's not failure, that that's just saying, all right, what we're doing is going to put us out of business. The Pac-12 is Blockbuster right now. Blockbuster Video. They didn't pivot when Netflix, when they understood that DSL was coming out, and they didn't believe that it was because they were getting 30% of their revenue from late fees, those terrible late fees that they used to charge people.
And they were so busy patting, they were patting themselves on the back for putting Hollywood Video out of business.
Yep. So instead of pivoting their business to a different model, they were like, no, because that's failure. No, failure is letting your business die. And the Pac-12 is not pivoting right now, and it needs to just blow out the Pac-12 network because it didn't work. It's okay. Like remember when Microsoft came out with the Zune that was supposed to stop the iPod? Like, it didn't work, and what did, instead of Microsoft continuing to forge down this path, they were like, you know what, this didn't work, throw it away, throw it in the trash, and begin again.
Well, I that when you're so tied to your product, the Pac-12 network is sort of Larry Scott's baby, right? Then that it would be the ultimate admission of failure.
He needs to be fired.
Yeah.
He needs to be fired. All right. We're up to your specialty, Ralph. The recruiting in the Pac-12.
I don't have much of an update this week. I do know that UCLA lost a recruit from last year to the transfer portal, and we're about to see a lot of activity pick up. The transfer portal. Today was a big day. Tomorrow's going to be even bigger. But Jamon McClendon, who's a three-star running back out of Spring Valley, California, decided that he is going to leave UCLA. So they lost a player. Mississippi State, which is not a Pac-12 team, obviously, but they have Mike Leach out there. We had talked about how he was going to trim some of the fat. They lost like six players within the last week, including two really high-level running backs and a couple of quarterbacks too, which I thought was kind of interesting. And that's, you know, people are on the move, especially now that you can transfer without penalty. It's going to be very interesting to see how all that turns out. And then I know that a player from Mission Viejo, and I'm trying to look him up right now, committed to Oregon State. Mission Viejo always produces a high level recruit, one or two at least every single year. And they were able to get an athlete, and I'm just having a little bit of trouble locating who they got. So just give me a second. But there wasn't really a whole lot of recruiting activity. You know, we talked last week about Arizona State.
Are you talking about Jimmy Valson? No, that kid's from Texas. Actually, that kid was already committed from
Easton Massacarinas, yeah. Was he somebody who was already committed and he was just giving an interview? Okay. I saw that come across my timeline from one of my rivals' colleagues out at beaversedge.com. It looks like that's just interview. Not a ton of recruiting stuff to go on right now. ASU, you know, everybody's kind of after that same quarterback from Utah.
Darts.
Yeah, all eyes are on him. I think his name's Jackson Dart. ASU and USC both have their fingers crossed. We'll keep you updated.
Which means USC is recruiting him because he's flying up boards right now because he's lighting it up. But there's no way that they keep Jake Garcia, Miller Moss, and sign Dart as well. That's the definition of bad recruiting. If you recruit three quarterbacks, what is your quarterback evaluation process? I get two, but three? And if you can convince all three to sign, you've actually turned from like coaching to a pimping.
I don't know, man. There's people out there that believe you get as many. I mean, Washington State had seven scholarship quarterbacks on the roster last year, I think. So I think the attitude is you just bring in a bunch of people and the cream rises to the top and everything else will sort itself out. So
the difference is that like they weren't bringing in three, four star quarterbacks. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that doesn't happen because they usually go somewhere where they want to play, but at least no Pac-12 teams are turning into Texas right now who's having decommitments in on their board. There's a thing that says Tom Herman fired for cause. Like, get out of here.
They're trying to see if they can. Ooh, breaking news. Trevor Lawrence tests positive.
Oh, I was going to tell you he tests positive for COVID.
Well, I guarantee you he will beat it. He that's what he does is wins things. And speaking of COVID,
Zoltan.
Yeah, I want to get a shout out to one of our listeners who actually checked into the ER tonight, Paul Angel, who leaves us reviews. He tweets at us every single week, and
he checked into the hospital.
Yeah, he checked into the hospital. He got diagnosed. He said he wasn't
feeling well. Yeah.
And so, shout out to him. I asked him if there was anything we could do, and he said, "You and George Reister can record one podcast without any negative ASU remarks." And I've been keeping track. I think we did it today.
Yes. We have not. We have not. Man.
Yeah, but
he's always tweeting, always that. So you guys go out, send him some love at Rubber Meat Road on Twitter, just as it sounds, Rubber Meat Road.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Paul. Hang in there. Keep us updated because I think it's important. There's a lot of people who get COVID and are ashamed of it. And I really don't like the shame that's associated with this whole thing. I love that you've just kind of been putting what you're going through out there for other people to see so that they know that, you know, if they're symptomatic, you know, what to look out for and that they know if things get to a certain point that, you know, they need to take care of themselves. The fact that you're putting that stuff out there, I think is a huge service to everybody. We appreciate you and heal up soon.
Well, that's the part of this whole thing to just divert for a second that a lot of people, because there are clearly surging numbers across the country, Wisconsin's one of the states, they had a game canceled, all of that, that people, yes, everybody has COVID fatigue. We all want it to be over. But people are acting like that this is not a big deal and they don't get it until I'm not saying in any way that this is Paul. Like I'm just speaking just about in general, because you see comments and all this stuff. People don't believe it's real until somebody that they care about, like Paul, or somebody that matters to them, that it shows up at their doorstep. And then they're like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty serious. And granted, the majority of people are not going to die. However, a lot of people have really terrible experiences and they have, you know, things that they're dealing with for months upon months. So like, let's just be kind to people in these situations, because it's not good.
Just conscientiousness. And I, you know, I've been following Paul throughout this, you know, whole thing. And he, you know, he's been somebody who has been, and most people are, you know, I'm in a situation where I go to two or three different high school football games a week and just hope, you know, I keep my distance. And, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm out here and I'm seeing the, you know, some of these schools have the stands full and people aren't as masked up as they should be. And out here in Arizona, every single week, about 8 or 9 games get canceled due to players and stuff testing positive. And it's there's nothing you could do. That, you know, the only thing that you can do is try to be conscientious, sanitary, and keep your distance. And, you know, some people don't want to do the conscientious part. They don't want to wear a mask and they don't want to limit their activity and their travel. They would rather take the risk than feel constricted. And I understand it. I totally get it. I don't blame you for feeling that way, but all we have is our actions, right? And so I hope people will act in a way that helps us get to a point where there's not another massive spike, and that ultimately it serves your own selfish purposes, that we get to see some football. So, you know, that's best of luck to Paul, and also to Trevor Lawrence, apparently, who will be missing Saturday's game against Boston College.
Well, and depending on when they say, like, if he is asymptomatic, if he's asymptomatic, if they say his symptoms started on Monday, then he'll still be good to play against Notre Dame, because the ACC has a 10-day policy. So, but if they say his symptoms started today, he'll be out on for the Notre Dame game in two Saturdays.
Yeah.
So just let that sink in a little bit.
Yeah. Getting drafted by the Jets is only the second worst thing that's going to happen to him in the next few months.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So let's say that Trevor Lawrence, okay. This is just a hypothetical question. Let's say that Trevor Lawrence does get sick, right? Like then, and he has to, I mean, cause like the kid from the Jaguars, Reichwell, I forgot his last name, where he can't play this season.
Yeah.
If something like that happened to Trevor Lawrence, would they shut down college football?
No, I don't think anything's stopping this train. If it hasn't stopped by now, people, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. But, and I'm definitely not rooting for that to happen. But it will, you know, it'll matter to some, you know, like you said, everyone takes their own experience into account. You know, when I saw a Utah Jazz game get stopped right before tip off, that was it for me. That was everything I needed to know. You know, right then and there. And I've had family affected by it. I've both, like I said, on this podcast, my in-laws both, you know, they made it through. But you know, my father-in-law's, you know, secretary ended up hospitalized. I've had a lot of other people, you know, go through it and have some pretty bad after effects. And, you know, we got some family friends who lost parents and grandparents, and I got somebody who works for me on my staff who lost their father-in-law. You know, it's everywhere, and it's definitely hitting close to home. And, you know, so I get it, because it's all over the place and in my life. And then some people get it, but they're making a calculated risk and saying that, you know, I would rather live according to my principles, then, you know, be restricted. And if I get it and die, I get it and die. And that's, you know, they're free to do that. Unfortunately, it affects all of us, you know, what happens affects all of us. But I think that at the end of the day, you know, you can only control yourself, and I'm trying to do my best job, and I think you are too. And that's all you can really do is do your best. And unfortunately, it's going to be with us, you know, until we have a vaccine. And then past that, obviously, you know, we're just going to have to learn to live with it. But until we have a vaccine and we can save a few hundred thousand lives, you know, we just gotta chill if we can. And I wish the best for everybody who's afflicted by it. I don't think you should be ashamed if you get it. And I think if you were acting carelessly and you got it in the process, as long as you're able to learn something from that and try to, you know, help other people from that point on, I think you got to welcome those people back into the tent, because there's just too many things that we're not forgiving each other for right now. And the list is getting too long of things that we're saying are irredeemable. And unless we start redeeming each other for some of the missteps that we believe that we're taking, we're just going to stay fractured for a really long time. And I think that that's going to be a worse fate than COVID. You know, the idea that we're unforgiving of each other and we don't allow for people to grow and to change. I think that, you know, that's a fate that's worse than what we're going through now. So my hope is that people wise up, and if that's through the experience of getting it, I hope that they're able to turn around and share their experience with people and wake some more people up so we can save some lives.
Yep. Last thing up, the Pac-12 released its men's basketball schedule. They put it out. That's 12 games. They released 12 games, Ralph. And it looks like everybody is playing 2 games, which puzzles me, because, like, I get that this is all, and it starts, these are games from December 2nd to December 23rd. So every team has 2 games up until then. And with the recent COVID spikes, all of this stuff, do you believe that these games will take place?
I do. I do. Starting on, you know, is that really December 30th start date?
No. December 2nd.
Oh, December 2nd for the out-of-conference stuff?
No, for the in-conference. So there are 2 games. So, like, Colorado, Arizona starts.
I must be looking at the wrong thing then. Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. So December 2nd through December 23rd, and then the games beyond that are... Yeah, I do. I am positive that we will see a college basketball season. Will it go according to plan? Maybe not, but I don't think they're going to delay the season. I think that this gives them more than enough time to figure out what they're going to be doing. Yeah, I have faith that we will see a college basketball season. I hope we will. This is supposed to be a really good one. We got a lot of great players that were going to go to the draft that decided to come back. And, you know, UCLA is supposed to be on the rise. ASU is supposed to be up there. University of Arizona changed up their recruiting. So they've got an entire team of, like, some of the best players from outside the United States that are all going to be trying to gel together. You know, SC was improving a little bit. Oregon is always good. I really, really, you know, perhaps even more than the football season, I really want to see this basketball season play out. So I'm being optimistic.
Yeah. I'm going to continue to be optimistic too. I think that's important. You know, so we'll see if it happens. I just think the fact that each team only has 2 games in an entire month is kind of weird. I just don't know how that works. You know what I mean? Like, how that works for, like, a continuity of the season and all that. Yeah, so obviously, of course, thank you guys for listening to this episode of Pac-12 Apostles. Early next week, we will have a big time preview episode, because it will be game week. I'm so excited, Ralph. I'm so excited because college football is not the same without the Pac-12. So, yeah, so I'm super excited. So hopefully we will, get a chance to preview the games and get all the games in on the schedule, hopefully.
Hopefully, 9 a.m. 9 a.m. USC ASU. It's coming.
All right, peace out. Catch you guys next episode.